My Little Cowboy, the true story of a father and son that began in the 1800s and continues to this day. Dedication. To my mother, Carmen, she called me to this life and nurtured and cared for me. To my estranged friend, Reese, he taught me balance, patience, and a willingness to live. To my dog, Einstein, he taught me how to love unconditionally. Acknowledgements. I've been inspired to write by everyone I've ever met. I'm so thankful for all of the experiences, both positive and negative, that added so much diversity to my life. I'm so grateful to my friend Gina Hendershot. We've spent many hours talking about my book, Reincarnation, and many other topics. Thanks so much for the suggestions, the critiques, the editing, and the support. This has helped me to gain a deeper understanding of my work, my views, and my ideas. A special thanks to my brothers and sisters. Each have added so much to my life. Passion, Henry. Compassion, Minnie. Selflessness, Irma. Self-worth, Richard. Free spirit, Mary Carmen. Opportunity, Rosemary. Steadiness, Ramey. Socializing, Bobby. Freedom, Margaret. My parents added everything else. And thanks to Gina Nigro, who guided me through a past life regression using hypnosis. I've never done such a thing. The session confirmed my unusual experiences in remembering my past life. Introduction. One morning in May 2005, as I was driving on my 17-mile trek to work, I decided to put a meditation CD into my player. The cover of the CD had a warning advising that you should not drive while listening to the meditation. I blatantly ignored the warning and pushed play. The road was not well traveled, and I could easily hit the stop button if I needed to, so I couldn't see any problem with doing this. I found it to have very nice and soothing music with nice, calming words. My mind began to wander, and imagery from different historical periods began to flood my thoughts. I thought about the wagon wheels, the highway road, horses, the steering wheel, the covered wagons, the highway signs, and my car on the road traveling on the highway to work. Barely 15 minutes into the CD, I felt a level of clarity I had never experienced before. I became super aware of my driving and the wheels of a stagecoach all at the same time. I could see a version of myself meeting a woman, marrying, raising children, and much more. The freeway exit caught my attention. It jolted me back to the subject of my work, my car, and the highway. As quickly as I had shifted into an expanded focus of hyper-awareness, my focus had shifted to an awareness of my job. My job was not very pleasant, so just the thought of going into work was not much different than slapping me across the face. I realized that what I had just experienced had characteristics similar to a waking dream. There was so much information in it. It possessed the qualities of a holographic image where you could see an infinite number of perspectives. If I focused on the wagon, I could discern the minutest of details about the wagon. It seemed that I could look at any aspect of the scene and know many intimate details. If I focused on the other versions of myself in the dream, I knew all about that man. When I focused on the woman, I could see she was my wife in the dream, what she looked like, how she moved, and even her mannerisms. It was quite odd. No matter where I focused, I knew all about the story. This story. When I got to work, I scribbled some notes and then shifted my focus to the work at hand. I documented the whole thing at lunch and that night. I thought, could I have dreamt my past life? I had plenty to think about. There was so much information. I wanted to know more. I wanted to know what happened next, since the story had seemed to end abruptly. I had a feeling that the story had a tragic ending. A couple of months later, July 2005, I was taking a road trip to San Antonio with my brother's family. I had just completed 6 hours of driving and pulled over for a short break. It was my brother's turn to drive, so I went over to the passenger side and made myself comfortable as my brother took over the task of driving. I started to doze off, and what seemed to be an instant later, I was in a waking dream. I saw the second half of the story unfold in the same holographic manner as the first half had done a few months earlier. However, this time, I saw the tragic ending. It was unsettling, to say the least. I woke up with a start and told my brother. I could tell that he was less than impressed. He was in his rhythmic driving pattern, probably thinking about his life's questions, mostly finance, I'm sure. I probably startled him, and he figured I was making a big deal about a silly dream. I don't blame him. Nevertheless, to me, it was a phenomenal, multidimensional, holographic dream. When we arrived in San Antonio, I documented my experience. Once I committed these happenings to paper, then the wagon wheels and horses that seemed to dominate my imaginings had vanished. This blew me away. Could this be for real? It was as if these imaginings had been trying to get my attention for years. I began to see connections in that story to this life. At times, the connections seemed to have far-reaching implications that were impossible for me to ignore. The son from that story in the 1800s is the same person as a close friend from whom I've been estranged for the last 30 years. I even recognized myself as the father. That life and this life, my life, were inexplicably intertwined. What follows is a narrative of that story that I once lived. I believe it was my most recent past life, the life that has profoundly affected this life. Chapter 1. Waiting is so hard. 1864. September 23, 1864. He was almost alone in the town square waiting for the stagecoach as he paced back and forth in the middle of the reddish-brown hard clay road. He looked like a banker or a businessman with his fine woolen tan pants and his well-shined dark boots. He pulled out his pocket watch while he was still pacing on the dusty road. He knew that the stagecoach would have to stop at the bank to load some valuable cargo before picking him up in front of his hotel. The coach should have already arrived, he thought. He would have been worried about the cargo, but he had the assurance from the town sheriff that all would go well. It was already 7 in the morning. He would just have to wait. Something that he hated. Waiting. Alexander was a very solitary man, always friendly, well-liked, and proficient at everything that he did. He worked as a bank manager, always staying in the big city. He rarely traveled to the smaller banks in the towns nearby. Instead, he would conduct most of his bank business between his hometown of San Francisco, a thriving gold rush town, and the major banks of New York. However, 2 days before, he had traveled to this small town about a day's ride from his home to visit his eldest son, under the guise of conducting bank business. He was very familiar with this town, but he never had much interest in visiting. He was much more comfortable with the feeling of the big city. Even San Francisco is no comparison to the home where he had grown up in the heart of New York City. He had traveled with his wife and infant son from New York to San Francisco long ago. What could anyone, even his son, find comfortable about this small town in the middle of nowhere? And where is that coach? Alexander thought. Alexander had lost his wife, the love of his life, some 13 years back. He never wanted to get married again. How could he even think about it? He had 2 sons and a daughter. His oldest, Alex, was 23, then Marcus, 19, and Marissa, 16. He loved his children and was very proud of each. The waiting was unbearable. Still, no coach. He made his way to the hotel porch as horses, carts, and people began to hustle and bustle along the roadway. He kept to himself and didn't make eye contact with any of the townspeople. Most people didn't pay attention to the stranger. They just went about their business, not quite sure what to make of him. But to some of the townspeople, he appeared extremely nervous as he paced back and forth. They weren't sure what he was up to. Perhaps up to no good, they thought. Alexander was lost in thought, impatient and distracted. He didn't notice that it was a beautiful, cloudless blue sky. There were two dogs in the alley next door to the saloon where he had met the sheriff when he first came to town. He didn't hear the rhythmical sound of horses' hoofs as they passed by him. Up the street from the hotel, he saw the town grocer, a shoe repair store, a blacksmith shop, and the town jail. The town was coming to life. At 8:30, beautiful, majestic horses pulling a shiny black stagecoach arrived in front of the hotel. Alexander snapped out of his distraction in time to see the driver motioning him to enter the coach. He took one last look up and down the street and hesitated before entering the coach. Was this all for naught, he wondered. His heart was crushed. There were two other passengers already seated in the coach, a wealthy couple named Charles and Victoria Adams. Alexander was familiar with them, as they were loyal bank customers who frequented the bank where he worked. Alexander was not shy. He graciously participated in the obligatory pleasantries of exchanging greetings with his traveling companions. Victoria noticed that Alexander looked a bit pale and asked, "You don't look very well, Mr. Johnson. Are you okay?" He was devastated. He had been sure that his son was going back with him. I told him that it was his choice. His son had seemed thrilled at this prospect of seeing his siblings and Gertrude again. "I'm just tired from this bank business. If you don't mind, I'll close my eyes for a bit and see if I can get some rest." Alexander leaned up against the side of the coach, pulled his hat over his face, and shut his eyes. He felt defeated and just wanted to go home. With that, the coach drove on. Alexander quickly fell asleep and found himself dreaming of his father. In the dream, Alexander's father was very angry with him. His father was very abusive, self-centered, and drank excessively. His father was yelling at Alexander. His father was telling Alexander that he was worthless. In his dream, Alexander was only 12 years old. Alexander thought that if he couldn't get his father's love, then at least he would try to get his father's respect. His father thought that this was so ridiculous. His father was laughing at him, ridiculing him, taunting him. Alexander woke up agitated and choking. This time, Charles asked,
"Are you all right? You seem distressed."
Alexander, using his might to gather his composure, sat upright.
"Yes, I am fine. I just had a bad dream. I apologize for upsetting your wife."
Victoria smiled uncomfortably. Charles continued,
"Alexander, you know what business this coach had with the bank this morning? I saw them loading some satchels into the compartment above."
Alexander knew that it was very dangerous to transport money on a coach carrying passengers, and that this might alarm his traveling companions. Alexander also knew that there was over $5,000 in those satchels. Alexander told him, "Just a small sum of money to transfer back to the main bank branch. There's nothing to worry about." Victoria shifted uneasily in her seat with a look of sheer panic on her face. Even before she could gasp, she knew instantly that something was terribly wrong. She had a sense for these sorts of things. The stagecoach was traveling on a narrow road when a shot was fired. The driver was killed and the horses ran in terror. Victoria, Charles, and Alexander were jostled about in the cabin as the coach careened over the edge of the trail, falling into a deep ravine. Alexander fell from the coach when it started down the ravine. Alexander saw someone up on the road above. "I'll get some help," he muttered to himself. Alexander, blood obscuring his vision, crawled up the side of the ravine. As he crawled onto the road, he saw the deputy seated on the horse. "We've had an accident. We need your help.
My travel companions are still alive down there, but the driver is dead.
The deputy got down from his horse to help Alexander. Alexander could still hear Victoria sobbing quietly. Alexander jumped as he heard Victoria's scream. Two loud shots silenced her scream. Even the birds went silent. Alexander laid still on the ground, writhing in pain, half in, half out of consciousness. He thought he was dreaming again, but the pain in his left leg was too intense. It was broken. With a mixture of tears and blood in his eyes, he looked up at the deputy and asked, "Why?" Then, Alexander passed out and began to dream about his wife, Martha. Chapter 2. Beginnings, 1838 to 1841. Will she go? Martha had long, thick, dark hair, almost black, and was as straight as could be. She had large, warm, dark brown eyes. Martha was a very independent, self-sufficient woman. Only 17 years old, she had already planned the rest of her life. Martha planned to complete college, get a serious job, and then marry. Her father, whom she loved with all of her heart, was not so keen about her determination to pursue a college degree. He would often tell Martha that most women, if not all, were quite happy to just marry and have children. But Martha was his only child, and her father wanted everything for her. She was quite ambitious for a woman of her day. She didn't care, though. She was determined to do things her way, no matter what. Growing up, Martha excelled in her early school studies. She was very competitive and outperformed every boy in arithmetic and reading. She loved reading and found that she had a natural knack for arithmetic. She felt compelled to spend her free time reading one of the many books that she would carefully sneak out of her father's library. She was always careful to return the book back to its rightful place in the library. Her father was so proud of his daughter. He always knew when a book was missing and found it amusing that his daughter thought that it would bother him that she would borrow a book. He often told his wife how proud he was of their daughter. Martha's mother was content to run the household and manage all of the important household matters, except for the finances. Her favorite pastime was knitting. She had hoped that her only child would spend more time learning how to be a proper young woman. She knew that times were changing, and perhaps it was not such a bad thing that Martha was developing a strong, independent nature. She loved that quality so much in her husband, and, of course, she loved her daughter with all of her heart. Martha left home to start college. It was exciting for her. She was on her own, and she loved it. She was just about to start her second year of college when Gertrude, a close companion of Martha's mother, sent word that Martha's parents were in a fatal stagecoach accident. She didn't know that her parents were really killed by stagecoach robbers looking for money and jewels. The robbers had known that her parents were very wealthy. Martha left school and returned to her parents' home to tend to her parents' funeral. After her tragic loss, she lost interest in returning to college. Perhaps later, she thought. She knew that, as a woman, she would not be able to maintain the lifestyle to which she had become accustomed. That is when she decided to use what she did learn in college to obtain employment. She found work very quickly with a local town bank. Martha learned that life takes good care of you if you let it. In spite of a very independent outlook on life, she was the most kind-hearted and generous person in the bank. All of her co-workers loved her and thought very highly of her. She always completed her work ahead of schedule and was never tardy for work. After a few weeks of work, she began to notice that one of the bank managers seemed to be throwing glances her way, oftentimes throughout the day. This made her feel very uncomfortable. She had no interest in men. She was there simply to save enough money to return to school, even though her inheritance would have allowed her to live a comfortable life. She wanted much more, though. One day, he was waiting for her just outside of the building. He'd been waiting a few minutes already,
and had turned to walk back into the building. She must have gone out through the back entrance, he thought. He stepped forward and nearly collided with Martha.
Excuse me.
What? Why are you stalking me like a common criminal? I didn't see you there. She was startled, and her words seemed to take on a life of their own. Her temper was flaring. I've noticed you gazing at me while I'm trying to do my work. You must know that this is highly improper, she condescended. She looked at his face and then his eyes. They went from their usual bright, boyish charm to wide-eyed darkness and confusion. She hurt him, and she regretted it. Even so, she was a proper woman. She hadn't noticed him standing there.
I'm so sorry. I just wanted to ask you if you would do me the honor of accompanying me to the church picnic this Sunday. I thought it would be a wonderful opportunity for us to get to know each other.
He presented a cool, calm demeanor with just the right amount of suave.
Well, you certainly are forward. I'll give you that. Now, why would I want to go with you? You know nothing about me, and I know nothing about you, she said.
She was both annoyed and intrigued all at the same time. He was an attractive young man that reminded her very much of her father, and he was always courteous and considerate to her. Even so, she was torn between her plans for her future, which didn't include men until she was finished with her college, and her heart. And she was still mourning the loss of her parents. She had decided that living in her parents' home in New York would give her time to gain some experience in banking. After a year or two, she would return to school. She had already completed 1 year and planned to complete her studies in banking. Martha remained unconvinced that this was a man's world.
That is precisely why I've asked you to the picnic. What better way to get to know each other while in the midst of our God-fearing neighbors?
Alexander stayed the course.
And why would we need to know each other any more than we already do? When I complete my assignments, Mr. Johnson, don't I turn them in to you in a professional manner?
Of course you do, Martha. And please call me by my given name, Alexander, he said. Now he was getting a little bit annoyed. All of the other bank employees called him by his first name except for Martha. Alexander was not a very patient man. However, as one of the bank managers, he dealt with difficult customers almost every day, and he somehow managed to subdue this shortcoming within him. But Martha was not a difficult woman. She was a strong woman. This was something that Alexander truly admired about her.
Alexander, she started.
Or you can call me Alex, he interrupted.
Mr. Johnson, I mean, Alexander, please do not presume to...
I'm sorry, Alexander, would be just fine.
And you may call me Martha. Now, what time did you say that picnic starts?
I didn't. It starts about 10. May I call on you at 10:30?
No, you may not. I'd prefer that you call on me at 11 o'clock sharp. My sister and I will be ready by then, she said as she looked away, hoping that he would not notice that she would enjoy his company more if she had someone to talk to during the picnic, other than him.
At least that is what she told herself. It was a lie. He had caught her attention on her second day on the job. She felt a strange feeling of recognition that she had never felt before. She thought that maybe she had met him at the train station when she returned from school, or perhaps she'd met him at the university. It really didn't matter, she thought. She met many people along the way and soon forgot most of them. Mr. Alexander Johnson was different. She couldn't just forget him. She worked with him every day.
Your sister?
He said. He thought that she had no siblings. Perhaps he had misunderstood her when she hired onto the bank.
Oh, yes, of course. I'll pick you up promptly at 11. Please don't be late.
He knew that she was always prompt. She always arrived at the bank precisely 10 minutes before the bank opened.
Good day, Martha. I look forward to seeing you and your sister on Sunday.
Good day to you, Mr. Johnson, she said as she turned away with a smirk on her face.
She had a pronounced lightness about her step as she seemed to glide away like a beautiful swan.
"Mr. Johnson," he muttered to himself.
"It's Alexander." She heard him, and her smirk changed to a broad smile. "I must tell Gertrude of the wonderful news," she said to herself. She always told Gertrude everything.
Alexander Johnson, happy.
Alexander had often dreamt of meeting such a woman. He thought for a moment and decided that Martha was precisely the woman that he had dreamed of meeting. She not only looked familiar to him, but felt familiar too. Nonsense, he thought to himself. He could not understand how he could dream about a woman that he had never met. It is just a coincidence. A wonderful coincidence, he reassured himself. However, he had on occasion dreamt about things that had not yet happened. As a young boy, he had once made the mistake of assuming that everyone had these sorts of dreams. He told his schoolmates about one of his dreams where the beloved schoolmaster died during a horse-riding incident. All the children made fun of Alexander. When the schoolmaster heard of the tale, he promptly punished Alexander for spreading such nonsense. The schoolmaster spoke with Alexander's father later that evening. After the schoolmaster left, Alexander's father beat him severely. The next day, the schoolmaster died. He'd fallen from his horse, just as Alexander had dreamt. Alexander was only 10 years old, living alone with his father. Alexander had arrived at the school that day, still sore from the beating he'd received. He mourned the loss of his beloved schoolmaster alone. The other children distanced themselves from him. Alexander brushed away the thought of this painful memory. There were many of these sorts of memories concerning his father, but this one was the worst one of them all. Father was a good-for-nothing drunk, he thought to himself. Alexander's awareness snapped back just in time to see Martha several yards away as she briskly slipped around the corner. What a beautiful woman, he thought. He felt triumphant that his plan had worked. He had exited the building quietly through the back door, had come around to the front to catch Martha as she was leaving work. He had been planning this for several days. Even though he was very nervous about it, he had felt like an adolescent boy working up the courage to ask a girl to a church dance. He was thrilled she had accepted his invitation to the picnic. Here was a smart, pretty, and very independent woman who stirred his heart in a way that felt both familiar and foreign to him at the same time. Memories of his mother started to play out in his mind, just long enough for him to brush them away. No, he would not go there. Alexander looked back at the building and decided that he should get back to work. It had already been a long day, but he had work to finish. He went back into the bank and made his way to his desk. The bank was nearly empty. His office was located away from the counters where the customer transactions occurred. His office was down the narrow corridor that was near to a modest grouping of four desks. One of them was where Martha usually sat. His office was in the far corner with a glass panel inset in a wooden door, through which he could see all of the desks in the office. His desk was situated in a spacious office that was filled neatly with carefully placed stacks of receipts, invoices, and other important papers. He enjoyed his job and took great pride in his work. The bank owner also had an office next to Alexander's office, but rarely used it. The bank owner relied on Alexander and another manager to handle most of the day-to-day bank business. Alexander sat down in his chair and started to look at the bank statement he had been working on before his mad rush to intercept Martha. He looked up and saw Martha's desk through the glass of the door which held his name spelled out. Mr. Alexander Johnson, Bank Manager. A modest-looking shawl was draped over the back of Martha's chair, and he remembered that his mother had always kept a shawl just like it draped over the armrest of her favorite rocker, for when she was a little chilly. Alexander had loved his mother. Alexander loved how she would dote over him. He was admittedly spoiled. He was, after all, an only child, he thought. He couldn't remember for sure, but he thought that he was about 8 or so years old when she died. He couldn't remember what she had died from. No matter, he thought, it was a very long time ago, and He was grateful that he could remember how happy he had been when they would picnic together. The three of them would often go to the picnic, he, his mother, and his father. Those were wonderful times, he thought, as a smile started to show through his tightly clenched teeth. After his mother died, his father had changed. He went from a man that would drink occasionally to the one that would drink himself into a drunken stupor until one day he drank himself to death. He hated what his father had become, a mean drunk who blamed the world for his own misfortune. Alexander paused for a moment and then supposed that maybe his father had become unraveled when his wife had died. Odd, Alexander thought, why that hadn't occurred to him before. Alexander gathered some papers and placed them carefully into a satchel. The sun had not yet settled down for the night, and he wanted to get home. He bade farewell to the other bank manager and rode his horse home. Alexander remembered that day that his aunt had come to visit him after his father had died. His aunt had brought with her several large packages. Some were so heavy that his aunt had left them on the carriage. "Your mother had asked me to keep these things for you. She asked that I give them to you when you were older. But now that your father is gone, I thought that you should have them. Could you help the driver with the last two items?" his aunt said excitedly. Alexander and the coach driver had managed to bring the rest of the precious cargo into the front room of the house. The coach driver went back to the coach to wait for Alexander's aunt. "She asked me to provide you with the rest of your inheritance, too. She was hoping that you would go to college like her father had done," she said as she handed him a case. The case contained banknotes, several gold coins, and a letter carefully placed in an envelope. As he opened it, he noticed a delicate fragrance that reminded him of his mother. He glanced over at his aunt, then unfolded the letters and started to read. "My dearest son, I love you very much. I wanted to be sure that you wouldn't have to worry about your future. I'm sure that my sister has told you as much." When Alexander finished the last page, his mouth started to quiver. He carefully placed the folded letter back into the envelope and noticed that his aunt was looking at him intently. She leaned forward and tugged him. "She would always tell me how much she loved you," she said, still hugging him. "Thank you," said Alexander. "Even though I was very young when she passed away, I still remember her." The memory of the day his aunt had visited him had started to fade as he wiped an errant tear from his cheek. The warm feeling gently caressed him as he remembered what his mother had written to him in that letter. He still had the letter safely tucked away in the desk in his study. Alexander lived fairly close to the bank in the house where he had grown up. It was a modest house. The house was on quite a large property situated very close to the big city. As he came up the trail, there was a large 8-foot-wide hitching post just to the right of the front porch. Off to the left was an area that held a large overgrown garden full of weeds and brush. Behind the garden was a large barn that had the same dark-colored, weathered wood as the main house. Both could have used some paint. As Alexander walked up the wooden steps, a large, wide porch stretched the full width of the house. He'd always thought it was odd that the steps were not in the middle of the porch like most houses, but rather on the side closest to the hitching post. The front door was in the middle of the porch, with a comfortable, creaky swing chair along the far side of the porch. The swing was as deep as the porch, about 6 or 7 feet. Alexander enjoyed some homemade supper. Most of the time he would cook it himself, but sometimes his neighbor, a longtime friend of his mother's, would leave something for him. Alexander didn't spend much time visiting his neighbors. He spent so much time at the bank he didn't have much time for anything else but chores when he got home. Even so, he definitely appreciated his mother's friend. They really never talked much, except to thank her with a few dollars now and again. Once, she had started to tell him about his mother, and, after just a few words, he politely asked her to refrain from doing that. His eyes had begun to well up, and it was more than he could handle. She had noticed his eyes and never discussed his mother with him again. Alexander fed the horse and spent the next couple of hours completing his chores. There was so much work to do around the house. He sometimes thought that he should buy a smaller place in the city and forego the maintenance that was required for such a large property. He made a very nice salary as a bank manager, and he could afford to hire a hand to better care for this property if he really wanted to stay there, he thought. No matter. He made his way back to the house, cleaned up, and retired for the day. He had finished his chores much quicker than usual. He still felt energetic and truly happy. He thought about Martha, how beautiful that she was, and drifted off to sleep. He's the one. Martha wasted no time in telling Gertrude every detail about Alexander. "He's the most beautiful man that I've ever met," said Martha. The words were flying out of her mouth, with hardly a breath of air between those words. "I've noticed for weeks now that he's been interested in me. I thought it was hardly proper to..." Martha continued. She had noticed that Gertrude had started to drift off in thought. A memory flittered through Gertrude's heart that reverberated through her entire being. She remembered her beloved childhood sweetheart. She was a young woman of 15 years when she met John. He was the most beautiful, handsome, and smartest man that he had ever laid her eyes on. After 3 years of courtship, John and Gertrude decided to marry. John was the only sibling of Martha's mother. He was 21 years old, and his sister Mary, Martha's mother, had turned 24 years old on John and Gertrude's wedding day. Gertrude was extroverted, and John was very introverted. What a great combination, Gertrude thought. Gertrude had waited patiently for John to propose. Gertrude was a very patient woman in spite of her natural extroverted nature. She relished the anticipation and excitement of how things unfolded. She dreamed of spending the rest of her life with him. It was a beautiful spring day on the day of her wedding. She was dressed in the most beautiful, billowy, lacy dress. Everything was perfect, she thought. However, the marriage was not to be. Gertrude frowned that her beloved John had been fatally injured on the morning of her wedding. You've been listening to an excerpt of My Little Cowboy by Roger Mendoza, as read by the author. You can find additional information at www.my-little-cowboy.com. That's mylittlecowboy.com. The book is available at amazon.com in paperback and at barnesandnoble.com. Thank you for listening.